High School Slumber Party is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
School is out and it's Friday night. I'm all wrapped up and I feel all right.
Welcome, fans of trilogies, fans of Peter Kavinsky and Laura Jean getting together, fans of Happily Ever After. This is High School Slumber Party, the podcast where me and some friends look back at our teenage years through the lens of some iconic high school-centric films. I'm Brian Rodriguez, and the party's at my place this evening. But first, school's still in session, and we have some homework to chat about.
This was your assignment, and I would like to see the results.
Ooh, February, the month of Valentine's Day, the month of love. I hope you show your love for High School Slumber Party by hitting that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. And remember, you could always listen on the flagship, cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. The home of this podcast and so many other great pop culture podcasts. Remember, also, homework every week is to participate. Social media, guys, I want to hear from you. Class participation is a huge part of your grade, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And of course, I hope you listened to last Friday's episode, another romantic film, if you will. We talked once again Twilight. We're doing our Twilight Forever series where we just watch the movies of Twilight Forever. Kate Hudson, great guest, of course, the guest host for that. And this, this person is joining us all lifetime for Twilight, which is this year. He'll be rewatching all the Twilight movies with us as well. Joe, too, joined the podcast. And my God, it was a blast. Check that episode out. It's awesome. Check out all our Twilight episodes, cageclub.me, or wherever you get your podcasts once again. But that was your homework, to watch Twilight again, to listen to that episode. And of course, your homework today was to watch a Netflix film. And I feel like I'm going to cry because it's the end of an era. To All the Boys, Always and Forever. We did it, the trilogy. Well, I hope you did it. I hope you did your homework. Jenna Guillaume is here once again, as she has been throughout the series. I love having Jenna on. YA writer. Her second book is ready out in Australia, but it's coming out in America in April. She'll tell you all about it on this episode, and we break the movie down. We talk all about it. I really can't wait. Love this series. Love talking about this series, and love talking with Jenna. But of course, we haven't done this in a while, and I think it's about time. You know we need it. We need to hear from our special anchor, Brian Rodriguez, because he's got to share with us some high school movie news. Other Brian, thank you for having me, as always. This is Brian Rodriguez for High School Movie News. And boy, do we have a lot of news for you this week. First, some cool things, right? Cool Blu-ray releases. Weird place to start, but whatever. That's just how my notes work, guys. Pump Up the Volume on Blu-ray for the first time ever. You know how hard that movie was to find when we covered it here with Mike Manzi Honestly, I've come around on that movie. I've seen it since then again. The first time, I don't know, I was a little confused. Now, I think it's awesome. So, The Godfather himself, Joey Lewandowski, who watched it as well and enjoyed it, you're vindicated, man, because I think I'm more on your side than on Mike's side this time. So pump up the volume. Check that out on Blu-ray. Also, there's a 5-movie John Hughes Blu-ray pack that just came out as well. Check that out. I mean, I haven't really bought a Blu-ray in a while. Well, that's a lie. I buy a lot of specialty Blu-rays. I haven't bought like a mainstream Blu-ray in a while. Wow. Sound like a hipster right now. But maybe this is something that's worth it. Who knows? Maybe it's better than having to pay $2, $3 to rent it every time. I don't know. Definitely going to look into it. So we got a lot of cool new movie news coming out. Of course, Moxie. It debuts next week. We cannot wait. We want to see it. It's that Amy Poehler-directed movie on Netflix. It's supposed to be good. We got some special things planned for our coverage of Moxie, so I definitely want you to keep your ear to the ground, listen to a lot of a High School Slumber Party, and find out what we're going to be doing for that. I'm really, really excited. Of course, some other things. Our third Spider-Man film in the Tom Holland Spider-Man oeuvre. The title was announced. There was a couple fake titles, a couple tease titles. Not sure if he is in high school again, but you know if he's still in high school, we're going to cover it. It is called Spider-Man No Way Home. I can't wait. I've been re-getting into Marvel. I have a love-hate relationship with the superhero movies, but I love WandaVision, so I really can't wait for this one. Spider-Man No Way Home. Saw a trailer on TV, actually, for a high school movie called Boogie. It's an independent film. It's only in theaters right now, I believe, but if you guys know anything about Boogie or have seen Boogie, let us know on our social media because I'm very, very curious. This one feels really, really cool. Okay, what else? Oh, senior year. Rebel Wilson has signed on to star in this film, and I kind of really like the premise. So she was a cheerleader in high school, and she's been in a coma for 20 years, and it's her senior year, and she's got to go back at her age now to do her senior year. Count me in. I'm looking forward to that one. We'll check out, you know, how that one progresses and what news we get on that one. And yeah, I think that's it this time. This is going to be an episode chock full of things I've heard. But for now, this is Brian Rodriguez for High School Movie News. Whoa, 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 Peter Kavinsky style, the bell doesn't dismiss you, I dismiss you. Hang tight for a second, we got a lot of info to share. But first, thank you Brian Rodriguez for always being so informative when it comes to that high school movie news. Always a pleasure hearing from him. So let's do this, right? Let's talk to all the boys, always and forever. Some fun notes on the movie from Serious Notes on the Movie. I was really thinking about this franchise a lot while editing, of course, while talking to Jenna. And it's just so groundbreaking, just having that Asian American lead in this. And just so, it's so in tune to her culture and her mom's culture as well. And then I read the news and there's a lot more violence against Asians and Asian Americans here in the United States. It's just sad. It's just depressing. And I don't know. Obviously, I don't have the answer to it. Violence is not good. Race-based violence is not good. I just don't want it to be ignored either. I think sometimes we see the world as a little too black and white here. And a movie like this gives me hope. And I just wish the best for that whole community. And in terms of this movie, for Lana Condor, I hope she can be a leading person again in films for the next 20, 30, 40 years. That's a dream of mine. Hope it's true. What else do I have in my notes? Oh, yeah, Shawnee Mead, listener of the show, friend of the show. She posted a tweet about To All the Boys and, you know, about the aesthetics and the look of it. She's an artist herself, so wow. I mean, Twitter really took to it. The tweet went viral, so congratulations, Shawnee, for that random tweet. But it's true. The aesthetic of these films is amazing. We talk about it here as well. You know what's been good with these films too? The music. Music is a big part of this film. So I want to leave you with a song from the soundtrack, of course. Not just a big part of this film, really, a big part of the series. So pack your favorite jammies. Tell your mother sleeping over Brian's. Because we're about to get our party on. I leave you with what ended up being the song that Peter Kavinsky and Lara Jean picked as their song. Their couple song. Oh God, so teenager. So anyway, the song is called Beginning, Middle, End by Leah Nobel. Class dismissed.
It's alright, I was worn out and jaded from trying on people to love, but you fit so well. When they ask why, I can never explain, but a symphony played when you told me your name, and I took that as a sign.
Jenna, so happy to have you back on the podcast for a lot of reasons, but I feel like when we started this 3 years, what was it, 2019, right? The first one came
2018.
Out. 2018? Jesus.
I know.
2018. Oh, I feel old. But I feel like just things were just so different with streaming and teen movies and all that, because part of our conversation, I listened back, was like, wow, look, Netflix has a teen movie that's new, or Netflix is making movies. They have like three of them. And then now it's like, it's just insane to think about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's such a good point. It was only the beginning.
We were like, oh, Set It Up is there, and The Kissing Booth, and this, cool. Now, at least in my profession here, talking about teen films, Netflix releases too many that I can't even watch them all, which is insane. But this is one of the OGs, and this is one of the series that you know, I credit a lot on this show for starting kind of a YA adaptation revolution to streaming. I know that's a lot of words, but yeah, I'm happy to talk about the third and final installment, as far as we know, To All the Boys Always and Forever. But first, Jenna, one of the things that's changed since our first episode, not only are you a published writer, but you've published multiple things since then.
I have. I have written and published two books, but actually my second book is not out in America just yet. It's coming out in April, which is really exciting.
That was going to be my next question. So, because I know we don't have access to it here yet. So, wow, April, that's awesome.
Yeah. So my first book, What I Like About Me, came out in North America last April. I was meant to come over for a book tour, but unfortunately that didn't happen, but it is out there. And yes, my second book, You Were Made For Me, is coming out this April, and they're both YA rom-coms. You Were Made For Me is a modern take on weird science. So, you know, if you like teen movies, you should like this book.
Really up our alley. So I have your first book here, and I was going to ask when it's available. April, super exciting. Well, hopefully you can do a book tour here at some point in the future, I'm sure. You're not retiring from writing anytime soon.
No, I'm still writing YA. So yeah, I was also meant to see BTS in concert in America, and I still have all of my tickets. And I'm really hoping they don't just cancel the concerts altogether, because I really want to go.
Ooh.
So, you know, as soon as it's safe to do so, I will be there hopefully to see BTS in concert and to see my books on shelves. That'll be really nice.
Ooh, it seems like a dream trip. Well, it's going to happen. I believe in you. We believe in you. I'm excited Thank for you. Both those things for you.
Hopefully. Who knows?
So on High School Slumber Party, it's been a while, but you just introduce yourself by saying your full name and your high school, if you will, and whatever else you want to say.
Hi, my name is Jenna Guillaume. I went to Lake Illawarra High School, which is on the south coast of New South Wales, about 2 hours, an hour and a half south of Sydney, if anyone knows where any of that is. Yeah, it was just like a small town high school, pretty depressing. But, you know, I got out.
As we know, this is, like I said, a series that's super important to Netflix, super important to teen films of this day. And we last left off in a kind of
interesting place. We knew there was going to be a third. I remember in the last one we discussed, we kind of got surprising news when the second one came out that they had already filmed the third, which was interesting. So Netflix just kind of had this, I don't know, waiting for them to just deliver it. And they finally did over Valentine's Day weekend. Here's the little Netflix bio, and then we'll get into kind of chatting about some stuff because I do have some questions. To all the boys, always and forever. Senior year of high school takes center stage as Lara Jean returns from a family trip to Korea and considers her college plans with or without Peter. Dum, dum, dum. Okay, so a lot of the feedback from the last one seemed a little bit Twilight-like, but even kind of more. Yes, there's always Team Peter people. I'm a Team Peter guy, I think. But there was a lot of Team John Ambrose out there who weren't happy, believe it or not, that she chose Peter in the last one. And I feel like that's still out there on Twitter. Have you seen any of that yourself?
Definitely. I did like a meme compilation for the whole series for BuzzFeed actually recently. And I was going through and like searching for like what people were talking about. And there was so many people that were like, okay, but where's John Ambrose? She should have still ended up with John Ambrose, which I find fascinating. I do love me some John Ambrose, I have to say.
I like John Ambrose too, and we discussed it, but I feel like the Peter thing was kind of inevitable, you know? Like,
yeah, they were always endgame.
So it is weird that people are still asking for him, but hey, credit to John Ambrose, the actor and the character, right? Like, he's not even mentioned in this one, and people are still like, where's John Ambrose? I love it.
Yeah, there were a few people that were like, hey, remember Josh, lol, but like, no one actually wanted him back. It was just funny that he just was like never mentioned again.
Yeah, it's funny because the first one, again, we have like, which guy should you choose? The second one, we kind of have that problem too. And in this one, there's really not that temptation. It's more about the college choice and where she goes. And most people return here. Obviously, Lana Condor, Noah Centineo, everyone else, really. Do we get any new characters, really? I don't think so.
I mean, New York, I guess, is the new character. That's Lara Jean's new love interest. She falls in love with New York City.
Very true. So it's more about place than people, which is definitely a change. As we mentioned, again, like, this was a back-to-back filming job here. So a lot of films have adjusted to kind of pandemic for better or worse. This one was already done then, and it actually takes place, usually graduations are in May, June here, 2021. And this is her final year here in high school, that whole off to college thing. Did you have any just initial thoughts before we talk about some scenes, basically? You have read all the books, correct?
I have, yes.
Was this one similar to the third book? The third book has a slightly different title, I believe.
I think the third book is called Always and Forever, Lara Jean. Oh, okay, so they've just taken the Always and Forever. Yeah, it's pretty close to the book. Basically, the third book is about Lara Jean's anxiety around everything changing. So her dad's getting married and she's, you know, leaving high school, and she's got to figure out where she wants to go to college and whether her relationship with Peter is going to last. So yeah, it pretty much is all the same themes, which is to say, like, not much happens. And, you know, like, it's interesting because I think there has been criticism that it's a bit boring maybe, or yeah, I mean, not much really does happen. And I totally get that criticism, but at the same time, it's kind of nice to see a story that centers a girl and is just about kind of her anxieties and her worries. And it's a quieter story that we get to delve deep into her feelings.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. So I think on the last episode you mentioned, or maybe it was the one before that, that you mentioned that it was possible to possibly combine the second two books into one thing. Do you still feel that way, or do you think that they did justice to what the story for this third one actually is?
I think they could have combined them, to be honest, because like plot-wise, there really isn't much to it. But, you know, I'm not going to complain about seeing more Peter Kavinsky and more Lara Jean. I just love them.
I wrote that down at one point. Like, this film feels like it wasn't necessary, but if you're a fan of like Lara and Peter, you know, it's fun to you. You know what I mean? It's just like more to the story.
Do you know what it feels like? Just like an extended fluffy epilogue. Like,
yeah.
Kind of like the fluffy fanfic that you go to read after you've finished the series.
Absolutely. That's a really good call. Because definitely, again, if we stopped at the last one, fine. Even if we stopped at the first one, I'd be okay. But it's like, hey, do you want a little bit more? Then that's your option here. You know, it doesn't seem necessary, but it is cool to see. If you're one of those people who are asking, well, how do they end up, Laura Jean and Peter? This film is for you.
Exactly.
This one, too, I was thinking about it because last time we also mentioned how very rarely are there teen film sequels. Third films are uncharted waters almost for teen films. When I talk about sequels a lot on this podcast and other podcasts, I always try to think, could this exist without the other movies? And for me, I think definitively the answer is no. And that's not like a criticism, but this is definitely not its own story, if that makes sense.
You're totally right. It's not. I think the first movie can exist on its own without the sequels, but the sequels definitely cannot exist without the first movie in the sense that you can't enjoy them as standalones, as you say. You need all the setup in the first movie to even appreciate these ones at all, I think, especially the third one. The second one, probably, you know, with the introduction of John Ambrose, you maybe could enjoy that more as its own little love triangle story. But this one is really, like I said, it's basically an epilogue. So it's not that much, it's not really a story in itself, is it?
No. And I could imagine, you know, we're both fans of Peter, but could you imagine if you hadn't seen the previous movies and you just saw this version of Peter? You probably hate him, you know? You're like, why does she want to stay with him?
He does have some good moments in this movie, but I will say, like, the shine wears off a little bit in the sense that you do kind of, I think the movie, maybe even more so than the book when I read it, like, gives the sense that maybe they won't actually make it and maybe they shouldn't actually stay together, which makes me a little bit sad because I do love them together.
Yeah, no, I had this same exact feeling, which is funny because after the first movie, you're so happy that they're together and you're like, this is perfect, this is great. And I know it's high school, but we say it on this show a lot, whatever, we're just hoping for the best, right? And the second movie, you know, it is what it is. But this time, like, you start to think of, oh, maybe Laura Jean can have a future without Peter, and that's okay. And he has great moments, and he does redeem himself, and he's not like a complete jackass or anything like that. But there are times where I doubted them, and not in like a good way, like, oh, I hope they make it. Like, I was thinking to myself, if there is an ending here where they don't make it, maybe that's okay, you know? And I never thought I would feel like that for Peter and Laura Jean. I'll just put it that way.
I'm totally the same. And I am also, like, as a avid rom-com reader and writer and watcher, I'm always like pro happily ever after, like they stay together and they're meant to be together. But I agree. The sense that I got from watching this movie was like, actually, maybe they're just that high school couple that are really in love, but then they go their separate ways and it's okay. And they think fondly of their relationship, but they grow up and they grow apart, which I never expected to feel about them. And especially in a movie where it is, they do still have some of these nice moments, but it very much felt like almost like it was Lara Jean disengaging with him in some ways.
Yeah. So I think there'd be a good poll out there to people like, do you think this works, this long distance thing? And I don't know. I think it would be pretty split.
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone wants them to stay together, except maybe the people that are very firmly John Ambrose. Like, imagine, okay, scenario, like John Ambrose and Lara Jean go to the same college. Like, come on, they're together. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Think about that. Like, let's say, it's funny because it seemed like there was times in the second movie that like, oh, even though, you know, he obviously likes her, they could just be friends. They seem to have just like a friendly relationship. But nope, we see that's not the case here. But if he shows up at NYU and he's like, oh, I happen to go here, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I'd be worried if I were Peter.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I don't know. I feel really weird about this because I really just want to ship them and want them to be together forever. But I guess it's good to like see that girls, you know, have other options and they don't have to be tied to their high school boyfriend. But at the same time, like, they do have a really lovely relationship. I would have liked to have seen that like delved into a little bit more in this movie and like the romance to have been a little bit more in focus, as opposed to, like, as I said, like, it really just felt like Lara Jean moving further and further away from him in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because if, again, I mean, not to sound like a broken record, but I felt like they're almost preparing us for that, even though it didn't happen, you know?
Yeah.
So the director here is the same as the last one, Michael Fimognari. I guess that's his name. And it's interesting because we mentioned it, but they replaced the director from the first one for these two. Not sure why, but it is that recurring thing we see. We saw it with Twilight, where first film with a woman director exceeds expectations, replace them with some dudes. Or dude.
Mm-hmm.
I have never been able to dig up a real reason that I believe why she was replaced. So I have to assume there's something sinister going on, not to spread conspiracy theories, guys. But I don't know. It definitely did feel like they filmed these back to back. You know, I guess that's why we get that sense that this is an epilogue. But maybe they had to because of age, or certainly because of a pandemic that they couldn't predict. Production, like, notes wise, though, there's not really much on this film. Like, I feel like this is not getting maybe the deep dive press that the last two installments got.
Yeah, I don't think so. I've seen like lots of interviews with the cast, but it definitely hasn't got the same level of hype as the first two movies, I think. But that could also partially be like, we are in the pandemic. I don't know. We are in a very different world.
For sure.
Than when the first movie came out.
For sure. There's no denying that. So, did you like the way that this film opened in Korea, in Seoul? That's her mom's homeland, you know.
Dear Peter, hello from Seoul. By the time you get this, I'll probably already be home, but I couldn't leave without writing you. You always tease me for being such a homebody, but I think you'd be proud if you saw me here. Everything my mom told me is true. Korea is beyond anything I could have imagined. We've been running around nonstop trying to see and do and eat all the things before spring break is over. We're having an amazing time together. Although my dad might be having the best trip of any of us.
Hey girls, I think I want to ask Trina to marry me.
This was all part of my master plan, so boom, you're welcome.
But the best part is spending time with my sisters.
I'm so fancy. Can't you taste this gold?
What do you think of that whole, you know, our first little vacation in this film?
I did like it. I have to say, when I heard that they were filming in Seoul, I was really excited because I thought that there would be maybe a whole subplot about Lara Jean going to Seoul, and that would kind of supplement some of the conflict and tension that isn't really there in the book. So I was surprised when it was just like an opening montage. I was kind of hoping for more from it.
Yeah, no, definitely. When they announced that, I thought it was going to be a big part of the movie, but it just was this little like cute little, I don't know. Again, it was cool to see, and I liked that connection with her mom. It was super important, but it didn't matter, if that makes sense, you know?
Exactly. Like, I really loved that she had that family time, and especially the sister time, and they were reconnecting with their heritage and with their mother, but it didn't really impact the movie in any way, or like Lara Jean's character, I don't think. I would have liked to have seen that journey have more of a effect on anything that happened.
This, you mentioned fanfic before, and again, I don't mean this as a criticism at all, but in that respect, but this part did feel like a fanfic thing you'd see on the internet, and like, oh, Lara Jean goes to Seoul, you know, and you just kind of read it, and it's a fun little cute story, and she comes back, and Peter is broken into her home somehow. But you know, he has a cute welcome back moment, but I was like, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he has a key, but I guess it sets up the idea that they're long distance and she's missing him. But it just wasn't, it didn't pack enough of a punch for me. I would have liked to have seen more time in Seoul.
It's funny that you say that because, you know, she's there and she looks like she's having the time of her life. And she's like, I really miss you. And I was like, really, do you? Because it doesn't seem like it. And I'm not against her not missing him because it just seems like a good time, whatever. But it is funny to think about. But you're right in a sense that it does foreshadow New York later when she is having a really, really great time when she goes to that party and stuff, and we'll talk about it. So maybe that's the purpose of it. I don't know. But hey, you know, I'm glad she got to go there at least.
Yeah. And I mean, it looked really beautiful and made me want to travel to Seoul. Like, I'm just like, let me out of this goddamn country. Let me travel, please.
That's another thing. So I was watching with my wife and she's like, wow, maybe we should go to Korea. You know, maybe like Korea paid to put this, like South Korea paid to put this in the movie and have an advertisement for it because, hey, they won me over, you know?
Yeah, they could have. It definitely looked like a lot of fun.
Okay. So, you know, the real, I guess, crux of the film is the whole college thing. Peter's gotten into Stanford and they're insistent on going to Stanford together. Side note, I talked about this a little bit in The Kissing Booth and other films. It's always funny how in these movies, everyone in the movie is going to like the best college, not everyone in the movie, but the main characters are going to the best colleges ever. And the choice is like, oh, do I go to like the best college on the West Coast, the third best college on the West Coast, or the fourth best college on the East Coast? You know what I mean? Like, but Laura Jean deserves it. It's well earned. People in The Kissing Booth do not, but that's another story.
Yeah, like the guy from The Kissing Booth, doesn't he go to Harvard or something? And I'm like,
yeah.
I don't think, has he ever actually like got an A? Like, I don't think he's, that was surprising to me. But look, as an Australian, my only context for all of these colleges is TV and movies. So I think in my mind, like, do other colleges even exist?
I'm glad you said that because, like, you know, for an American, yes, I know other colleges and they exist, but it does seem like every single movie, it's like, I'm going to Stanford, I'm going to Harvard. Oh, I guess I got to go to Berkeley, which is an hour away. So I was getting a little pissed off, to be honest with you, because I thought that the conflict was going to be, oh, should I go to Berkeley, even though I didn't get to Stanford? Oh, it's going to be so hard being an hour away from you. And like, that's not really a conflict. It was at the beginning. Once they threw the NYU thing, that made a lot more sense. You know, you're 3,000 miles away. You really can't visit each other. Maybe when you go home and see your family, yes, you could take a plane ride. But what kind of college kid can honestly afford a ticket from San Francisco to New York regularly? Like, that's not going to happen realistically. So there is conflict there. But I've seen it in other films where the conflict is like, oh, we're going to be just an hour or two away. So to be honest with you, I was a little afraid of that. But what did you think of, this is so random, but, and it's mentioned here though, what did you think of Peter getting into Stanford and not Laura Jean? Because as much as I like Peter, I feel like Laura Jean's more qualified, if that makes sense.
It definitely seems like that. I mean, I don't know. Did he get in on like a lacrosse scholarship or something? Is that a thing?
It is a thing, but they're not like specifically clear about that. He says a couple times, oh, I have to train for school. So I assume, but it's funny that they didn't just say that outright, because that would totally make sense then. Like, he's just really good at sports. So that's how he got in. You still have to have good grades. Like, they don't just take the best athlete who doesn't have great grades. Like, you have to have a baseline level, but they're going to let in someone who, you know, is pretty smart, but is really good at a sport, for example.
Yeah.
You know? And lacrosse in this case. So maybe that's how he got in. So I don't know. Did you have any other thoughts on the overall, before we get to New York and stuff, the overall college conflict, even how she doesn't tell him at the beginning and such?
I agree with you that I thought it was good that they raised the stakes with having her suddenly want to go to New York. And I think it was important that she realized that she had these other options. I think that was part of Lara Jean's problem, was like she had this really set and narrow vision for where she wanted her life to go. And we literally see that play out in the fantasy, and it's a lovely fantasy, but it is very much a fantasy. She's not really grappling with the reality of growing up and, you know, spreading her wings. Mm-hmm. So I really did like that they introduced that. And I think it was important for her as a character to not just grow within the period of the movie, but also see the potential for growth beyond that. And actually, one thing I really loved, which I don't know if you were going to bring this up separately, but I understood why Lara Jean lied to Peter. Like, it was frustrating, but I kind of got why she freaked out. What I really loved, and this was my favorite thing in the whole movie, I think, was when Peter found out, he didn't get immediately angry and yell at her. He said, like, are you okay? And that was just such a crucial point, and reminded me, like, yes, this is Peter Kavinsky we're talking about. This is why he's so great. He's emotionally intelligent, and he understands that if she's lying about this, it's not because she's happy about it or that she's okay with the situation. Like, he literally sees that she's struggling with this whole thing, and his first priority is her feelings and not his own.
I didn't get into Stanford.
What?
The text that I sent you, it was a mistake. It was to Margo. It was about something else.
I don't get what you're saying.
We're not going to college together, Peter. I got rejected. But it's fine, because I got into Berkeley, and I know that's not what we planned, but it's only an hour away, and I'm going to get better at driving, and
stop.
We can spend the weekends together.
Are you okay?
I'm sorry, I really wanted to make it work for us.
Stop. This is not your fault. Okay? At all.
Yeah, honestly, that's one of the moments that I wrote down. I was so afraid. I was honestly about to be like, forget Peter Kavinsky. I'm done with him. If he was going to be like, what? You're not coming to Stanford? And again, or what you said, or if he's just like, how dare you lie to me, you know? But he wasn't like that at all. And it was great because he knows her enough, at least by at this point, where he knows that she didn't lie to be sinister or evil or anything like that. She lied because she was nervous about telling him. So it is a really, really nice moment. Sometimes in the film, he's a little bit delusional, like, oh, you could transfer after your first year and things like that. But maybe I've put him too much on a pedestal at times, because then I'm like, wait a minute, this is like a teenager. I think of myself at 17, 18. I probably would have said the same thing. So I can't really fault him too much for that. And he's definitely better than me for not getting angry at a situation like that, you know?
I know. If I found out someone had lied to me like that, I probably would immediately jump to anger. I think Peter is a bigger person than me in this situation. He would rightfully be hurt that she has kept that from him. But as I said, like, he's prioritizing her feelings over his own. I think the stuff about being like, well, you'll only be an hour away or you can transfer and that kind of stuff, like, that is his character being optimistic. Mm. And like, he just loves her so much. He really does. And he just wants it to work out. It's just like, oh, Peter. Oh, he's just such a sweetheart.
Yeah. So there is that aspect of it. And that's why the other movies serve as like a good, base for who the Peter character is. Because the Peter we know, this makes sense too. But again, if someone just dropped in, they might be like, what's this jackass all about? So he's a sweetheart. He's a nice guy. He's the perfect boyfriend. He's the correction of all the potentially bad boyfriends we've seen in teen movies. And they make that pretty clear here by, showing a lot of other teen films. There's always allusions to it. We got a couple here. Well, we got at least say anything here. I love Peter. He's one of the heroes of this podcast. And just to echo your sentiment, so glad that was his tact in that moment.
Yeah. And like, while we're on the subject, can I say another moment that I really loved about Peter in this movie?
Absolutely.
So at the beginning, when they were talking about they were going to college together, and he asked Kitty to teach him how to braid Lara Jean's hair.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, that is like, oh my God, that is what girls want. Girls don't want whatever guys think girls want, like the alpha male or any of that crap. Like, no, we want guys to be comfortable with their masculinity and caring enough about what we care about to actively learn to braid hair so that he can take care of Lara Jean's hair while they're at college.
I'm glad you pointed that out. I mean, I noticed that too. That's a really great moment. It's amazing, again, that this guy, he's so perfect. I know I'm stuck on this point, but why do you think there's so many people who fell in love with John Ambrose in the last film when you have, again, a guy like Peter Kavinsky out there?
Well, I think the thing with John Ambrose is like, he is also kind of the dream boy, but in a different way. And they both could be equally good for Lara Jean, or maybe not equally good, but good in their own way for Lara Jean. And so you see that potential. I think Jordan Fisher as well is just so charismatic and yeah, dreamy. So he really helped to sell the John Ambrose appeal.
Yeah. It's just interesting because, you know, when you keep making these great Peter points, and you see them throughout the film. One thing I'll say that I noticed, I did find it funny in this movie that Peter doesn't seem to hang out with any more of his friends, you know, where Lara Jean still has her friends. Do we see Peter with like other people in this movie?
I think the main time we see Peter separately is at the prom, and he's kind of, he was prom king and Lara Jean was not prom queen. Like, I always thought, and maybe this is just me as an Australian, not like my knowledge of prom culture is purely, again, through movies and TV. But I just thought that was a couple thing where, like, you would be nominated as prom king and queen and, like, as a couple. Like, it was basically the most popular couple in the school.
I feel like I've had to do this a lot lately, not just from people who aren't American, but young people as well, because prom king and prom queen is something that proms, even when I was going to high school, stopped really doing because it's, you know, kind of, it could get kind of nasty, you know. You don't want to disappoint someone there, like, oh, you're not the prom king, you know what I mean? Like, and you've seen it play out in movies. It's usually a point of some kind of drama, right? Prom king and prom queen. It was definitely something they did in like the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, probably still the 90s. I would say only maybe half of schools do it anymore, if not a lot less.
Wow, that's really interesting.
But it's always in movies still.
Because it's good for conflict.
It is good for conflict. Except in this movie where they didn't really just like, hey, yay, Peter. But you can just vote for anyone really. Sometimes they'll have nominees on the board. In movies, it's always like the popular couple because, you know, usually the most popular girl is dating the most popular guy. I did find it interesting how Laura Jean didn't win it though, because at this point they've been dating a while now. And I don't know. I'll put it this way. I feel like prom or popular dynamics, dating Laura Jean would have knocked Peter off the popular ladder. Because but that's not a bad thing, right? And I feel like Peter's the kind of guy who would totally be like, I don't need to be popular. I'd rather date Laura Jean, you know?
Yeah, totally. That's really interesting because I assumed that like dating Peter would make Laura Jean popular. And also like, why wouldn't she be popular? Like she's beautiful, like, and she's kind. I guess she's very introverted and shy, isn't she?
Yes.
I just assumed that she would become popular by proxy, I suppose.
I think if she sold out a little bit more, she could be, but why would she do that? Like we don't want her to do that. I think if she started, you know, doing more cheerleader stuff and some of the stuff that Jen does a lot, that I think she could get there. But I think Peter Moore went, at least this is my perception of it, Peter Moore went in the Laura Jean direction, like more introverted than I'm going to be on all these committees and get people to go to the pep rally and talk to a lot of people, you know, which I'm totally cool with. And I think most people who watch this movie are totally cool with. They rarely position the popular people in movies as the good guys, you know?
Well, yeah. So I think then we saw at prom, she felt very alienated from Peter once again. And, you know, he was kind of hanging out with the prom court or whatever it was. I don't even know. But like, there was that moment where she was like, oh, like we're already so far apart. So I think that was the only time in the movie we really saw Peter as an individual without, he was very much about Lara Jean in this movie, uh-huh. Like to the point where he's, own individual personality kind of did get lost a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I 100% agree, which it was interesting and it's weird. And like I said, we need the Peter from the other movies to pump it up. But then, like you said, this prom scene, maybe we'll talk more about it, or maybe not, because it doesn't end up really being that pivotal or that important. It's nice to see. I'm happy we could see them go to prom together and such, but it was weird that there was almost, as I say it, I was going to say there's almost no conflict with him and being prom king with this random girl or whatever, but maybe that was the moment where Laura Jean, I don't know, was thinking about them being apart and then that it would work out. I don't know.
No, it definitely pushes her in the other direction in terms of like making her feel distanced from him. I don't know that it's so much about the other girl, just that they are different people and exist in different worlds. And that's always been somewhat of a conflict in their relationship. But I think this, when it's like literally they are going out into different worlds, it suddenly was shoved right in Lara Jean's face. So I think that was the moment where she was like, okay, this isn't going to work out.
For sure. So let's talk, that conflict that we've talked about, the whole New York thing. Does it ever say why they're going to New York? Just like a school trip or something? I don't know.
I think it's just a school trip. Yeah.
But it seems like it's just like, oh, let's go to New York, but we're not going to do anything with teachers or educational. Just have fun. I mean, good for them, whatever. And I'm happy they stayed safe. But yeah, so what do you think of our second trip of the movie, really? Or the whole New York setting, the NYU thing, seeing Jen. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, New York again looked very beautiful and just made me want to travel. This was a nice vicarious travel movie.
For sure.
I really liked that Lara Jean opened herself up to different possibilities, because I think that's at the start of the movie and even before that, at the start of the series, that was like the flaw in her character, right? Was that she was just like so introverted and so scared of change and stuck in her own little world that she just didn't even want to consider different possibilities, and this forced her to. So that was a nice moment of growth for her. And I loved the moment with Jen when they were like friendly again, and it wasn't this thing that it's like they're mortal enemies forever, even though Jen was so nasty with the scrunchie.
Yeah.
But like, still have not forgiven Jen for the scrunchie. But look, if Lara Jean can, I think that's very healthy for her. I was really happy to see that kind of mature reconciliation between them.
There were a lot of roads that they could have gone in this movie. I'm not saying they should have, but that they could have, because I've seen them in other teen films. One of them was that Jen thing, that she ends up choosing a college that Jen goes to. We've talked about in the past, what's her best friend's name? I always forget.
Chris.
Chris does not like Jen. They end up getting along, which is great. But I thought they were going to go in the direction like, oh, she chooses to go to college with Jen and Chris is upset. you know, because that's her rival, but they didn't go there. And you're right. They end up being excited that they're going to college together, Jen and Laura Jean. I mean, I was so happy with what happens in New York once she's the whole NYU thing comes up, because I thought it was just going to be another Soul thing. I'm like, oh, this is what this movie is. It's just going to be kind of fan service of what would Laura Jean be like in New York? What would Laura Jean be like in Soul? But once they added that conflict and she's at this, again, an awesome party with these great views, she's having the time of her life. And she's really says, like, I could see myself here and I could see myself, you know, I could see this being my life for the next 4 years at least. I thought that was pretty awesome. I thought they just, again, lifted, I think you mentioned, like, just lifted the stakes of the movie so much. And we know Laura Jean so well at this point that we're like, you know what? She's right. It didn't feel forced at all. It did seem like something she was finally, like, comfortable and happy with.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. I think, even though I said before I wish the romance was more front and center, I do think it was wonderful that Laura Jean was thinking about her options external from her romance with Peter, and that she wasn't making choices because she loved this boy. She was making choices for herself. That was really important for her character.
Yeah, I think it was great. I'm very curious in what order they shot these two films. I think they definitely shot them back to back, but I don't think they, like, mixed scenes or whatever. But must have been fun for the cast to just go hopping around Vancouver, Seoul, New York, all before pandemic. So, you know, good for them.
It's kind of wild, isn't it, that they shot them back to back? Who could have known that a pandemic would shut down the entire industry? Like, it was really fortunate for them that they managed to do it beforehand without even realizing that that was something that they actually very much needed to do.
Absolutely. It's amazing to think about. So another thing I wrote down here, and I was really curious about your thoughts on this, was the whole, if we want to call it drama, but, like, the stepmama drama that we have here. Like, of course, her hot dad is, in the last movie we saw, is, like, getting with the neighbor, and now they're going to get married in this film. And they kind of tease, like, especially with the older sister, like, is this okay? But it is resolved rather quickly and everyone's happy and dandy. And she seems like a really nice lady. So I don't know. What were your thoughts on this?
I liked it. I liked that she wasn't, like, this wicked stepmother that was ruining their lives and wasn't coming in. Because I think it's totally understandable if you're a teenager or younger. I can't remember how old Kitty is now, but, you know, especially if, I guess, if your parents passed away, there would be very mixed feelings about a new partner coming for into sure. your parents' life. So I think they did touch on that, but I did like the way that the family came together and saw it as a very positive thing. They want their dad to be happy, and they saw it not as replacing their mother, but as an extra person in their family. And I think actually, you know, I know we've been saying that the soul trip didn't actually serve much, but from that perspective, I think it was crucial that, is it Trina? She was there and she was supporting the family True. Through this journey to reconnect with the girl's mother. And that was a nice way to highlight that it was a healthy kind of way the family were moving forward together.
That's a really good point. And I feel like she also gave them space too, because she wasn't with them in the scene where they found their mother's lock at that dock thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So she was like supporting them on this trip, but wasn't inserting herself into sensitive moments.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Huh. That's a really good call. And I liked her. I mean, good for them. And good for hot dad for finding a nice lady.
Exactly. I like her. I think she's great. And I think there were a few really nice moments with her. And I think Lara Jean and Kitty in particular, there was some good opportunities for her to give them advice or just listen to them, which is really great to see. I think, like, it's just, especially for Kitty, probably who is the one that's going to be still living there while her dad is married to this new woman. Like, true. I think it is a very healthy environment for her.
Good call. Yeah. Kitty was interesting in this film. You know, I love Kitty. She's, like, been one of my favorite characters, but I started to see the seeds of, like, okay, up until this point, it was like, oh, Kitty's cute. I love when she interjects in things, but I don't know. The part of me is like, is she going to be like a really evil teenager? You know, when she gets there, because she's already at this level. But again, I can't stop loving her. The fact that she wants to go in that, like, tuxedo to her dad and stepmother's wedding and stuff. And I don't know. Give me Kitty.
Yeah, I love her. She's great. She's got such a forceful personality. And I think that's really interesting. It's really wonderful to see a young girl be so confident and sure in herself. I think as well, like, not that I think this is going to happen, but there's such huge potential in Kitty as a protagonist. She does have that amazing personality, but isn't without flaws, and definitely, you know, makes mistakes. And her confidence and her belief that she knows better than other people is definitely something that is ripe for conflict and for her going on a journey to learn to listen to others a little bit more as well, while still maintaining that confidence within herself. Like, I just think there could be an amazing Kitty spin-off.
I agree. That'd be awesome. Great idea. Pitch it.
Yeah. Jenny Han, get writing.
Okay, so a couple other things I just really quickly wanted to discuss. What did you think of the whole thing with Peter's dad and that kind of little segue we do here?
So Peter's plot with his dad was much more significant in the book, I think. It wasn't the main plot, but I think it was a pretty big arc for him. And I liked that they included it in the movie, but I don't think they gave it enough time and space to really have an impact.
Yeah, so the movie's 2 hours long, so I don't know what they could have done with it. But I agree with you there. I think that I kind of liked what was happening. Not that I, you know, enjoyed that Peter's dad left him or whatever, but it created some interesting background for the Peter character, maybe why he would not want Laura Jean to leave or whatever, or I don't know. It was cool to, not cool, but it was interesting to see his dad like with a new family and happy and trying to repair that relationship. But you're right, they don't devote enough time to it, where sometimes it comes out of real left field that I wish that moment when him and Peter, the dad and Peter reconnect at the diner, that it's more impactful to the overall story. It kind of just felt like a little side thing that we didn't need, which is a shame because, again, I think, like I said, it adds some depth to the character.
I agree. I think it was mainly there to make Lara Jean afraid of telling Peter that she wanted to go to New York, and that to kind of add tension around the idea that he was hurt by people abandoning him. So it was used in service of the conflict around the relationship as opposed to something that was significant for Peter on his own. And so I would have loved to have seen that explored. But as you say, like, it's already a 2-hour movie. Maybe there wasn't really the space for that. The movie was really about Lara Jean and her feelings. But yeah, it did add layers to Peter's character that we haven't really seen much of in the past. He has talked about his dad and the hurt there, but I would have liked to see more.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I'm not sure how, but you know, how they could have done it, but I definitely agree. Now, one more thing, really, before we kind of talk about the ending here. You mentioned that you wish there was a little bit more romance here. We do get some romantic angles. What do you think of those aspects here between Peter and Laura Jean, them trying to find their song, them talking about their meet cute, which, again, they had a technical meet cute in the beginning. I know that wasn't the first time they met, but it's like their meet cute on the track is very meet cute-y. But regardless, what do you think of, I guess, the kind of journey to find an anniversary song, stuff like that?
It's so high school.
Like, right,
it's just such a high school thing to be like, what's our song? Like, I don't know, who cares? I'm sorry, Lara Jean and Peter, but like, yeah, I understand, because I definitely was like that in high school
for sure.
And I have to say, I was underwhelmed by the choice of song. The music of the series has always been really amazing, and I've loved all the soundtracks. So I think I was just expecting a song that had a bigger impact on me, but it didn't for whatever reason, but maybe that's just me. But as for the flashback to the meet cute, I thought it was really sweet that Peter remembered the moment they met, even though Lara Jean didn't.
Dear Lara Jean, you told me to write something memorable, so here it is. My memory of the first time I met you, or as you like to call it, our meet cute. It was sixth grade assembly. You were sitting in the row in front of me, and your name was written on your backpack in glittery letters. Principal Cho called you up on stage to receive an attendance award, and your hair got caught in your chair. I helped you untangle it, and you smiled at me. My heart did a somersault in my chest. I didn't know hearts could do that. I had no clue then that you would become who you are now, the most important person in my life. Sometimes I can't believe how lucky I am that you chose me. We've been through so much together, Lara Jean, and I never should have doubted that we'd get through this too. But I got scared, and I hurt you. And I am so, so sorry. Of course you should go to New York. You should do all the things you want to do. I never want to be the guy holding you back. I want to be the one by your side. It won't always be easy, but I want to do whatever it takes to make this work, because that's what you do when you love someone. And besides, if we're going to be together forever, then 4 years of college isn't such a big deal. If you agree, then please consider this our new contract. I will love you, Lara Jean. Always and forever. Peter.
Hi.
And as a huge fan of the Babysitter's Club series on Netflix, I got a real kick out of seeing like little Claudia and little Logan playing young Peter and Lara Jean.
Yeah, I saw that. I wonder if that was like, you know, hey, we're doing this already. You mind if you guys film this for another movie we have? That's super cool.
Yeah, because they had like young actors playing them in the first movie, like in a flashback that they didn't bring back. But I suppose maybe those actors in the intervening years were a little bit older and couldn't play that age anymore. I don't know. But yeah, it was like, it was a cute little cameo.
Yeah, for sure. I thought that was really great. And it is, again, it is a super, no pun intended, but super cute meet cute. And I like it. And I do like the whole element of him, you know, writing her yearbook and stuff like that. But I don't know. Are you happy with the way the series ended and the way the film ended overall? Hopeful they're going to their separate colleges. But like I said, we do have a Peter and Lara Jean breakup here. It doesn't last long. After the wedding, he shows up in the tent and, well, after the yearbook scene, so we get a nice little reconciliation. I guess, what were your overall feelings on the ending?
I did like it. Even though we've talked about how it felt like the movie was almost setting up for them to go their separate ways, I would have probably been devastated if that had actually played out on screen. Like, we just needed that little moment of reconciliation and that hope. I think that's the key, is the hope that they can make it and they will stay together. Like, God, we need more hope in the world.
So absolutely.
I did like that.
I think they actually would have made more of like a social media impact if they broke them up, but I'm glad they didn't, because that would have been really tough to handle. You know what I mean?
Totally. It's like, I'm already like, we're already worn thin with everything that's happened in the past year or so, even like beyond that. So it's just like, I don't know, would Peter Kavinsky and Lara Jean breaking up for good just be the end of our last straw of sanity? Maybe. So really, they saved us all.
They really did. Because I would just be like, oh, I knew it. This is, you know what I mean? Like, of course. No, but yeah, I'm glad that it ended the way it did. It was a nice little coda to the series, and I'm hopeful for the future with them. So, yeah, I mean, again, cool ending. I like it on the credits. When the credits rolled, they showed scenes from the earlier films. I always like when they do that. Anything else you wanted to mention in regards of scenes or moments in the film that you really liked?
I think we've covered all the major ones. I think going back to what we've discussed in the previous movies, I really do love the aesthetic of the movies overall. They're so, like, pastel and poppy and very much like Lara Jean. And you really feel, like, centered in her world and her point of view, just through the aesthetic alone, is really powerful.
They're really, really pretty movies in that respect. That's something that I think I'll always take away from the films, like the look and the feel, and even the look of the promotion and stuff and the posters. I think it was really cool, refreshing and hopeful. So I'm with you on that.
Yes, very cohesive, very like unashamedly feminine, and yeah, like really unafraid to promote and focus on like Lara Jean as this like introverted, girly teenager who loves baking and rom-coms and all of that. Like, it's really, I just relate to her a lot. So I really loved that she's like this, the hero of this movie series.
And so many, I'm glad you bring that up, because so many characters in like modern teen films are like her friend Chris, you know, who,
yes,
which is cool too. I'm not like complaining about it, but it's nice to see what you said, like, you know, a Laura Jean. We can have Laura Jeans too, and it could be awesome. And she's great. That's, if there's something that I have to take away from the series that I hope is like the lasting impact of it, it is the Laura Jean character. So groundbreaking, so awesome. And the saddest thing for me is like not seeing this character again. Maybe they made this movie for me. Maybe I do need the fan service fourth movie, Laura Jean in New York. Who knows? But it's sad to say goodbye to her, but I'm happy where her and Peter end up.
I agree, totally.
On that front too, just like props for the whole cast here, specifically Lana Condor for doing this for three films and really bringing that across, you know, all our screens at home with just how passionate everyone feels about Laura Jean, enough where they're like, oh, I think you'd end up better with that person or that person. Awesome for Jenny Han too for creating this character, because it's pretty rare for a character to, these days, we live in such a cynical world that it's nice to have Laura Jean characters every once in a while that everyone likes and who's awesome, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it is. She's not like the kick-ass girl who has to be like punching things and taking names to have her own hero story, you know, like, and it is a very internal story. A lot of her conflicts are from within herself, but gosh, that's relatable. Like, especially as someone, I've got anxiety and all sorts. So it's just like, yeah, a lot of my battles are fought within my own head. And so I think it's really great that the series focused on that and allowed that space to unfold. As much as like I have criticized it for not much happening, I'm also glad that it happens the way it does.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a great way to put it. So let's get to our awards. So we give some of the same awards, some new awards these days. Our first award is called Most Likely to Succeed. So it's a big thing in the yearbook, who's most likely to succeed. And basically I define that award as who won the movie, or we could even do the series, like which character did you feel comes out most on top at the end of this film?
I think Lara Jean. Like, I think as we've discussed, she has had this huge emotional journey and is ending it in a place that feels good for her. She's made choices that are right for her, and she's hopeful for the future. And so, you know, I'm hopeful for her future as well. And I think that's the best thing you can ask for, really.
Absolutely. I mean, I think this was an easy one. It has to be Laura Jean.
Yeah. And as you said, like before, like Lana Condor just deserves so much credit for the way that she's portrayed Lara Jean. And we talk a lot about Peter Kavinsky and Noah's charm and charisma that he brought to the role, which is really important. But I think like Noah's career has proven that it's actually his chemistry with Lana that makes him so powerful in that role. So I think like she deserves a lot of credit for everything that is wonderful about these movies.
That's a really good point. And, you know, not to take a shot at him, but we have seen him in other things and he has not even been half as charming. So
exactly. Yeah, totally. He needs to be acting opposite Lana. He needs like Jenny Han and the screenwriter of all the movies, Sophia Alvarez. Noah just needs to star in things that those ladies are involved in, and he'll be right.
For sure. I'd love for them to do something that's like not related to this series, but they both star in kind of like another Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan rom-com.
Yes, that would be great. Let's see like an adult rom-com next. They're, you know, time has passed and they're both well and truly adults by now. So yeah, I think they could do a fun adult rom-com and just play totally different characters.
I'm with it. Ooh, good idea. Okay, so the next award I have is the Wooderson Award. Is there a character here who you would have liked to see more of in this film? Someone who they could have devoted a little bit more time to?
Well, it's not that I liked the character, but I think just from what we already talked about, I would have liked to see more of the story developed was Peter's dad.
Yeah.
I would have liked to just see a little bit more of that unpacked.
I agree with you. We went into all the reasons for that as well. So next award, topical to the franchise from the first film, but in modern movies, we see less and less of this. So Long Duk Dong Award. So is there a character here who you would rather just delete from a film? Someone we didn't need? It doesn't need to be because of crappy racial reasons, though if there is someone in here, please let me know. But otherwise, is there someone who you're like, yeah, I don't need this person?
I don't think so. There wasn't really a lot of like fat to be cut on the movie, I don't think. It already had like the established characters and established world. it didn't add anything new that didn't feel right, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And modern movies do a lot better than films in the past at like trimming the fat here. But especially, we mentioned at the beginning, there's really no one new in the cast that we have to introduce. So they kind of just focused on Laura Jean and Peter to an extent. So yeah, I didn't see any of that here either.
Yeah, and this movie series in particular, obviously, is kind of very much centered around the antithesis of Long Duk Dong, like, or like, you know, they call it out in the first movie, as you said. So it's kind of like there isn't any of those like really uncomfortable characters that you're just like, oh, this feels wrong, which is a relief.
Absolutely. And that's something, again, that's why when we first started talking about it in 2018, it was so groundbreaking for the time, just the diversity of the cast and just focusing on an Asian American main character. This is the movie that is exactly the antithesis of the Long Duk Dong thing. So
exactly, yeah.
No winners for that award, and that's totally fine. Okay, so Cameron Fry Award, and this award's named after Alan Ruck, who played a high schooler at 30 years old in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, though I think he did a good job. Regardless, we always have this award for if there was any high schoolers in here who looked like they were 30 or way too old to be in high school. And did we see anyone here who looked like that?
It wasn't too bad, I would say. The thing is, it's interesting though, kind of watching them all back to back, like you do see them age in a way that they shouldn't be aging as high schoolers. Like they do look a lot older in the third movie than they did in the first movie, I think.
I agree with that. I think last time we discussed how Ross Butler, who is 30, kind of looked a little
older. Is he 30? Yeah, wow. 30.
Well, that's the thing though. Like he does look older, but he does not look 30. So it's
no. I would have said he was like 25, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely doesn't look like a high schooler, but he definitely doesn't look 30. Yeah. Either. So good for Ross Butler.
I will say like the worst offender, but she's not a high school character, but she's a college character, is Margot, Janelle Parrish. Like,
Janelle Parrish,
that's a grown woman. And I think we talked about this with the first movie. Like she does not remotely look like a teenager or even in her early 20s anymore. Like she looks her age.
No, yeah, you're right. In the first movie, she didn't look like she was someone going off to college, and she's 32 now. So she definitely doesn't look like, hey, I'm still in college in Scotland somewhere. Yeah, like,
I think her character is meant to be like, what, 19 or something?
19, 20 at most.
20 at most. Yeah. She does not look 20. She's beautiful, but she does not look 20.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like if they had her have an adult movie, you know, where she...
Yeah, I've seen her in adult movies, like in adult rom-coms. Like, she did at least one holiday romance movie with, like, Hallmark or Lifetime or something, which I really enjoyed. But yeah, she is an adult.
That's always weird, too. We talk about it on this show from time to time. When you see someone already play an adult in a film, and then they go back and play a teenager or someone who's young, that's always jarring. So maybe we'll just give the award to her. Not her fault, but...
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so Rotten Tomatoes, it's early, so it's hard to say, but 78% positive from critics, 61% by audience. I feel like a lot of that might be the John Ambrose fans. Letterboxd, which we've been using, has 2.9 out of 5 stars, which is not a bad score. But Jenna, we do not care about those scores. On High School Slumber Party here, we give things our own grade. We're going to use the old, at least American high school scoring system of A+ being the highest, F being the lowest score. I'm going to hand you the report card, Jenna, give you that red pen. So what will you grade this film to All the Boys, Always and Forever?
Oh, that's so tough. I think I would give it a B.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I gave it a B minus, and I was like, okay, on the fence. B minus, right? Like, a lot of it is because I'm, you know, a fan of the series as well. I think the series is so important. Well, I'll ask you this question. How would you rank the three films?
1, 2, 3, like in that order.
Right? Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit of a diminishing returns, if you will. And not that the last one is so terrible that it ruins the series or anything like that. It's not bad, but the first one was just so good and so groundbreaking. And then it kind of just, you know, gets a little bit worse, if that makes sense.
No, I agree with you. And I agree. I don't think it's not one of those sequels where I'm like, oh, that should never have existed. I'm glad it exists, but it's just not as strong a movie as the previous two. And the second one wasn't as strong as the first one. Like, it is, as you said, it's diminishing returns. But I think, like, part of that is the first one is that good.
Yeah,
like,
it's a good call.
Immediately, like, cemented itself as on the level, like, in the great teen movie canon, like, immediately became part of that. And so it's really hard to compete with that. And I think there is a reason we don't see sequels to
for sure
all of those movies, because they are self-contained stories. And so, as I said, while I'm glad that these sequels exist, the first movie in itself is just an incredible standalone movie. And for that reason, it's really hard to, it's just the sequels were just never going to reach that level, really.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, do you think that a 10 Things I Hate About You sequel would have been good? Or, you know what I mean? A Mean Girls sequel? Like, it's
yeah, I mean, there was a Mean Girls sequel and that was terrible.
Oh, you're right. I totally forgot about that.
So, look, I'm glad that these moved, like, this at least got decent sequels. Like, it's not like the level of a Mean Girls sequel.
Yeah, I forgot.
But yeah, I think, like, say for 10 Things I Hate About You, I mean, there was a TV series, but I never watched that, so I don't know exactly what it explored. But I think it's with any kind of rom-com, you know, the initial rom-com is all about the will they, won't they, are they going to get together, and then they get together and that's the happy ending. But any kind of sequel is always going to need to involve more conflict. And so you're introducing, rather than being in a happy place, which is what the happy ending is, you're seeing the problems with the relationship. And that can be really interesting to explore, but it's not really a rom-com anymore in that sense. It kind of changes and becomes a different beast. And we just, for whatever reason, we as humans love seeing people fall in love. And we love the idea of the hopeful, happy ending. And then we can kind of imagine the happily ever after for ourselves. And then when you enter into sequel territory, you're more entering into reality and into the, like, hey, like, relationships are hard work. And that's less compelling fantasy material.
That's a really, really great point. I love it. You're so right about that. You know, that first rom-com thing is the meet cute, the fun part of everyone's, you know, just a go back on the movie thing with the meet cute, but the fun part of, you know, every kind of relationship. But not that, you know, being with someone is not fun, but you're right, it is hard work and it is realistic. So the longer it goes on, you know, if we had a fourth film or a fifth film or a sixth film, we might get more diminishing returns unless we got new characters or something, because it's just, I don't know, we're moving farther from that initial amazing, amazing first film in this series and the amazing, somewhat unlikely union of Laura Jean and Peter that we see in that first one.
Yeah, look, I don't think there will be another movie, but if there was going to be, I would like to see one like 10 years into the future where it's like Lara Jean and Peter as adults. I just think, like, exploring their college years, it would just be more of the same, like struggling long distance and that kind of thing. I feel like where we leave them, you can kind of imagine that, yes, maybe they'll make it work and it won't be easy, but they can. But if you want to tell a story from that, you're going to need problems. You're going to need conflict. And we don't want to see that play out.
Yeah, but 10 years would be great because they've hopefully solved a lot of these issues of the college
stuff
and they're settled and we see what happens then. So I like that idea too.
Yeah, I think that would be fun. But also, like, maybe that's just a fun fantasy. And again, maybe I don't really want to see that story play out because I just want them to be happy together and I don't want them to have conflict. But of course, relationships do have conflict, but I don't want them to have the kind of high stakes conflict that you need for it to tell a compelling story.
That's true too. I was talking with someone about, I think it was Friends or like a reunion of like a show like that. And it's like, you know, they left at a certain point. Do you really want to see this couple that you thought was happily ever after divorced now and hating each other? Even if they end up together at the end of like a reunion thing, right? Like, does it matter? Because you already knew they spent like 20 years, whatever, hating each other's guts, and it's like that makes things sad. So I don't know if we need it or not, who knows, but you're right, we're probably never going to get it, so we can just fantasize and imagine. Okay, so you talked about, Jenna, like you enjoy the aesthetic of the film, and that's always important for this next question. If you and I are at this awesome To All the Boys high school slumber party and you have a sleeping bag that's themed, that looks like something from To All the Boys Always and Forever, what does it look like?
I think it would be like pastel pink and mint colors, and then it would have just like whoa 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 written all over it.
We can't top that. Let's stick with that. That's awesome. You know what, a criticism of the last film and this film as well, We need some more whoa, whoa, whoas. I don't know why.
We do.
I don't know why they, like, I don't get it.
They did, like, a little nod to it in Lara Jean's fantasy sequence with her book was called Whoa, Whoa, Whoa.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great, but I was a little bit puzzled because it's like they obviously are completely aware of how much fans love it, but he didn't say it. And I think part of that is maybe that was, like, Noah unconsciously doing it in the first movie. I don't know that it was in the script, and so maybe, like, he's now conscious of it, so he's not doing it anymore. Or maybe they directed him not to do it because they were conscious of it. Or maybe he did it and it just didn't sound natural because he is conscious of it now. I don't know what happened, but it was disappointing to see Peter Kavinsky's whoa, whoa, whoas just disappear.
Yeah, I don't know. Give us a little fan service. Just throw them out there, you know, I don't know, somewhere, right?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. Oh, okay.
Hi, actually.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on. Stop. Whoa, hey, occupied.
Oh, hey, where are you going?
Whoa, hey, what's going on?
Whoa.
Whoa.
But unfortunately, we don't get it. Watch the first film for them.
Yeah, I was really bummed. Like, come on. You're an actor. Do your thing. Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, catchphrases used to be all the rage. I guess they're not cool anymore or whatever. Okay, Jenna, you and I are in the magical blockbuster of that, you know, we can rent any movies from any era that has ever existed up until this day. We know we're having our slumber party with To All the Boys, Always and Forever, but we get to the front counter and we see a sign and it says, rent two movies, get one free. And I say to you, Jenna, I'm gonna keep my place in line here, run to the back, find two other movies that we'll watch on the slumber party. What two other movies are we watching with To All the Boys, Always and Forever? And you can't pick the other To All the Boys movies.
Damn it. That is such a good question. I think I have to go Say Anything because they watch Ooh. It in the movie and there's a nice, Peter Kavinsky does a nice John Cusack reference to it. And then let's see. I will also say The Half of It because I think that's a really sweet teen rom-com. I don't know that it's such a rom-com because it's more subdued, but I just think like that's a really great Netflix teen movie that's come out in the last couple of years that isn't getting as much attention as any of the others, but it's a really gorgeous film and kind of ties into the whole like fake dating aspect as well. It's not quite fake dating, but it's the kind of Serrano trope that I really enjoy, and it's a really good exploration of friendship as well. So I'm gonna go The Half of It.
Great pick. I love The Half of It. We didn't cover it yet, but it is a movie that I feel like it's something that I kind of addressed at the end of last year, that there were actually so many great teen movies that came out that nobody saw because of everything that was going on, that they didn't get promoted or we just moved on to the next thing so easily. But The Half of It was one of those that I think went under the radar that was actually really, really good. So I'm glad you picked Say Anything and The Half of It. Great choices, Jenna. And this was a pleasure. I always love when you're on, appreciate it. And we've done it. We've completed the entire series of To All the Boys.
We did it. I'm a little bit sad. It's very bittersweet. It's been such a joy.
Well, Jenna, why don't you tell everyone where they can follow you on Twitter and such, and remind people again when they can, at least here in this country, when they could look out for your next book?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter and Instagram as Jenna Guillaume, which is my surname is GUILLAUME. So follow me on there. I love chatting about teen movies or movies in general anytime. And also I'm on Facebook if you search me for that. And yeah, my first book is already out. It's also coming out in paperback and audiobook in April as well, which is really exciting. So it'll be different formats if you don't want to get the hardcover. And then also my second book, You Were Made For Me, is coming out in hardcover in April. So April's a big month for me in North America. And I'm very excited.
Yeah, can't wait. I'll definitely be getting a copy of the new book. I might check out that audiobook as well. That sounds fun. And I can say on behalf of all the slumbers here, High School Slumber Party, we hope you get to your BTS concert and do your book tour.
Thank you. I hope so too.
Well, Jenna, thank you so much. And have a good one.
Thanks.
That was great talking with Jenna. She's so informative, opinionated, talented, obviously. Can't wait for her books to come out here. Can't wait for her to get to do that book tour and that BTS concert and everything she wants to do. We want all the best things for Jenna. That's for sure. So check her out on Twitter, Jenna Guillaume. She's a great Twitter follow. Like, I'm not just saying that because she's on the show. I love following her Twitter. She posts some really, really great stuff. She's always writing, always doing fun things. We'll have her on again. I got to think about what movie she would want to be on. I know she has a busy schedule, but we'll definitely, definitely have her on again. Woo, that episode was fun. 2 weeks in a row where something happened with the audio, by the way, but was able to salvage it once again. Thank God. We fixed our audio problems here at High School Slumber Party. Sometimes we're cuddling in our sleeping bag and we fall asleep a little bit and we forget what we're doing. No, I'm just joking. Technical difficulties do happen, but hopefully you didn't even notice and I'm talking out of my ass. Also, it felt weird doing a third film without the third time's a charm man himself, Mike Manzi, but this doesn't really seem like up his alley. He's more like Beverly Hills Cop 3 style than this film. So all good. I'm sure all is forgiven. Anyway, homework for next week, and it's big news. As we know, it's February here, and in the United States, it's Black History Month. So I've been kind of thinking of things to do regarding Black teen movies and the Black teen experience on this podcast. And this is going to go in line with a lot of other fun projects we'll be doing in the coming weeks, months, and years, actually, as we approach our 200th episode. I can't believe it. We're getting close to 200. I remember when it was 100. But there are going to be some changes on the show, some very, very positive changes, if you will. Not big changes, but fun changes. We're going to do a couple like little different side projects, and I'm happy to announce the first of our little side projects. And side project doesn't mean it's less in value. By the way, it probably means it's more in value, actually. These side projects are going to focus on particular genres, modes, movements in teen film, if you will. We're upperclassmen now. You know what I mean? We have to start taking the important courses. We got to start taking those courses that are going to prep us for college. Next week, next Monday, actually, because it's going to be a special episode, a special Monday release. We're going to be watching Boys in the Hood.
This is Los Angeles, gang capital of the nation.
It just goes on and on, you know. Either they don't know, don't show, don't care about what's going on in the hood.
South Central L.A.
Yo, Benito, let's do the local thing.
It's tough to beat the streets.
What am I supposed to do? Fool roll up, try to smoke me? I'm gonna shoot the motherfucker.
You have to think, young brother, about your future.
No, why you sweating me?
You're my only son, and I'm not gonna lose you to no bull.
Raven, don't worry about it. I can take care of myself.
Trey wanted to work his way up.
Trey is a grown man now. He is not a little boy anymore.
Heard you like Mr. GQ Smooth now.
Maybe some of what you got to rub off on him.
Ricky was looking for a better life.
I want to do something with my life, all right? I want to be somebody.
When you were a little boy, you used to run around here all the time with that football in your hand.
I always knew you would amount to something.
Doughboy was living by the laws of the street.
You looking at, nigga? We got a problem here? We got a problem, nigga?
Can we have one night where there ain't no fight, nobody gets shot?
It's hard to be a saint in South Central L.A.
I don't understand why you insist on learning things the hard way, Trey, but you gonna learn.
How to survive the South Central, rule number one. Get yourself a gun, and then South Central, yeah. That's how you survive. Rule number two. Trust nobody, especially a girl with a hooker's body. Rule number three, don't take your life for granted. This is the craziest place on the planet.
Something wrong? Yeah. It's just too bad.
bad, you don't know what it is.
Kirkland Shepherd will be here, and he's going to be co-hosting with me what I'm calling the Black Teen Experience, which will be a bunch of groundbreaking movies that focus on just that, the Black Teen Experience. The first one we decided to do is Boys in the Hood, a classic, and I know it couldn't be more different than To All the Boys, even though it has boys in the title. Very different. But it's an important film. It's a good film, and it's a film I'm excited to talk about with Kirkland. Kirk, you know, he brought this idea to me originally. He wanted to talk more about these films, and it's something that I've been thinking about doing and wanting to do since I started High School Slumber Party. I guess I was looking for the right partner or the right person who could bring me the Black teen perspective. So really looking forward to that. Check it out Monday, and it's going to be the first of a special series. I don't know if it's going to be a regular release series yet. We got to work on scheduling. But Monday's sort of the pilot for this. We'll see how it goes. Like I said, I'm really excited. Your homework is to watch Boys in the Hood and listen on Monday for our first ever Black Teen Experience episode. Really, really can't wait. But for today, for Friday, for tonight, I should say, it's time to crawl back into that sleeping bag, hit the hay, think about all the woes in our sleep that we want. So let's leave you with another song from this soundtrack, Wannabe. And no, it's not the Spice Girls version, which is also played in the movie. But this version, really, when it was playing, I was like, damn, I like this song. It's by a musician called Sandflower, Wannabe. And one more thing, guys, before I forget. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop to look around once in a while, you could miss it. Later, dudes.
Tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you really, really want. I tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you really, really want. I wanna really, really, really wanna see, see it. I wanna really, really, really wanna see it. If you want my future, forget my past.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.